time for a little love in the afternoon. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shows, in Your Own Shoes. It is Thursday, May 3rd, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as we do every Thursday. Thank you so much for joining us. We love to hear from you, so call in to listen live or ask questions at 347-857-2710, or you can also email us at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. So once again, that 10-digit number is 347-857-2710, and our lines are open, operators are standing by, so give us a jingle and please join in on a very hot topic for today. Actually, we're getting a little uncomfortable in our comfortable shoes with a very hot topic, child abuse. And we're going to learn to say no to abuse and yes to help. The International Child Abuse Network, Yes I Can, is a premier provider of information and referral services worldwide for those dealing with child abuse issues. Their mission is to break the silence and cycle of abuse. My guest today has a background in child development and nonprofit management and has served for more than 10 years in various capacities with the Yes I Can organization. So please welcome to the show a very dear friend and the president of Yes I Can, Sharon Uloff. Welcome, Sharon.
Hey there.
Hey there, back at you.
Hey, just to make a quick correction, I'm actually the current past president, currently the vice president. Our current president is Mark Levinson.
I know, but I just think the president fits you. I know, you know, VP is all good and stuff, but I don't know, it just sounded good. I think it was radio poetic license or something like that. So you are
okay.
The VP. You are the VP shoe, so yes, I do stand corrected. So I'm very happy that you're on the show, because I think as I guess we just spoke a little bit before we went to air, that it's much easier to kind of be comfy in your shoes all the time, and we need to learn how to, well, not how to feel uncomfortable, but when we feel uncomfortable, how to become more comfortable with that so we can address that and perhaps examine it and make a shift to change that. So,
agreed.
Agreed? Good. So far, checklist, we are on the right page. So tell us, I want to know why you're so passionate about working with the International Child Abuse Network, Yes I Can.
Well, you know, a friend of ours introduced me to the organization when she was on the board. She's no longer involved in the organization except very peripherally, and yet 10 years later, here I still am. And she introduced me because she knew that the mission that I had spoken to her about for my life was exactly the mission that Yes I Can was promoting. And she figured there couldn't be a more perfect synergy, and, you know, clearly 10 years later, here we still are, so she was right.
And I know you've had an experience with abuse. Can you share with our listeners your story?
Certainly. You know, my story is not all that unique. I mean, I suppose it's unique to me, but I certainly know people and know of kids that have been through much worse. But my story is that my father was physically abusive, and so I tried to find paternal figures that would fill that void that he wasn't able to fill, and those gentlemen, I say loosely, took my affections to be something sexual, even though I was 10 to 16. And so there was quite a bit of sexual abuse there as well with folks that claimed to be his friends.
Unfortunately, it's the world's best kept secret. And with technology today, you know how everybody is so intrusive in everyone's life, how this particular shadow still exists for so many. I'm not surprised when I speak to women, and I don't know what the ratio is. If you spoke to 10 women, how many women out of 10 have had their own story of some form of abuse, but the percentages are pretty high.
Yeah, it's if I remember correctly, it's 7.5 or 8 out of 10.
Yeah, wow, that's surprising and not so surprising at the same time.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
In order to help our listeners who are saying, ooh, that sounds so familiar, and to be able to recognize maybe their own experience, what was it in your experience that made you turn the corner to say, because I realize these kinds of situations that affect us in our affect our child can have a detrimental effect on us as adults, how we choose partners in our lives, where we go professionally in our lives. So what was it or who was it that helped you kind of turn the corner and say, oh, I can stop this abuse and take a higher road?
Wow, you know, if I could figure out what that magic formula is, I think I'd be a multimillionaire.
Yes,
you know,
start figuring it out. Take notes.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, there are kids that grow up in abusive households and they react differently. You know, there's something about those kids that are survivors that the child development experts call resiliency. And those that have increased resiliency tend to move into stronger roles and out of the victimization more quickly. And those that that have lower resiliency tend to be stuck in that, you know, victimization. So what is it, you know, what's the magic? You know, I don't know. I can tell you for me, which is not to say, you know, that this is universal. For me, I was lucky enough that my early childhood was not abusive. The abuse for me didn't start until I was 10. My early childhood wasn't clean. It wasn't, you know, white picket fences, to say the least. My folks got married because my mom became pregnant with me. She was 17. My dad was 19. It was her way of getting out of her father's household. It was the only way that she knew to do that was to get pregnant and then marry the guy that impregnated her. She, you know, to this day still apologizes for choosing the father that she did for me, but that's the case. She then divorced. They then divorced when I was 3. She married my stepfather. We moved to Israel. Israel is not an easy place to live. It's a war-torn nation, certainly was then. I lived through the Yom Kippur War in 73 and moved back to the States in 74 because the war was just too much for me to deal with. I couldn't handle it. And I'd gotten a taste over the last 2 summers as to what it would be like to live in America where they didn't have to worry about such things, about, you know, dad being called up and listening to the radio for his call signal and hearing the bombs or the air raid sirens or staying below the windows, you know, all those things that you have to worry about when you're living in a war-torn nation. And my father was still here, and I had spent 2 summers with him, and he was fabulous, and, you know, adults all warned me, you know, he's only like that because you're visiting, and no, my father's different. And, you know, they were right. They then had a son when I turned 10, and that was just too much stress for that household, and that's what turned the corner for him. That's when he became abusive, was after my brother was born. Not to say that I blame my brother, not in the slightest. It was just that having another infant in the house was just one more stress. You know, having me alone was one thing. Having an infant was just too much for that household. So for me, part of the blessing of being able to build that resiliency was having a very strong foundation in my early childhood with a mom and a stepfather that were very loving, very, very firm, but very open and very much willing to be questioned. You know, they grew up in the 60s. Their motto was question authority. So they were fine with me saying, well, okay, I'll do that, but why? Whereas my father was the mindset of, you know, because I said so. And you don't dare ask why. That's, you know, you're a child, it's none of your business, and smack. So that was part of it. And then the other part of it is, you know, once I got to the teenage years, my folks thought that the issues that we were having in the household were my fault, and so they put me in therapy, and so I've spent decades going through therapy.
How perfect.
And,
you know, in hindsight, how lovely for you.
Yeah. So those are the things that helped encourage that resiliency to get me where I am.
So how can we talk to our listeners who have a similar experience and to say, here's an organization that can help you if you have experienced certain situation. If this situation sounds a little bit familiar to you, here's a place. Yes, I can. How can you help people who have been abused and with domestic violence also?
So here's what I would say. You know, the first thing is if you can get to therapy, that's really the best. You know, if you have the resources in your community and the financial resources at your disposal, therapy is the best. Yes, I can isn't your answer. However, if you don't have those resources, either within your community or within your household financially, then what Yes, I Can does is that we are the sole provider of online facilitated chat rooms for child abuse and domestic violence survivors. So you can go online to our website, yesican.org, and go to the facilitated chat rooms. There are designated times, and they do have specific topics, whether it's teen or men only or significant others or incest or domestic violence, whatever it is, you can see the list. And log in on those times and speak with those that have a similar issue and with a trained facilitator. Our facilitators go through 60 hours of training to be able to not let you get stuck in that victimization role, but to move beyond that to say, you know, yes, that was awful, and no, it was not your fault and should never have happened, and what are we going to do what can we do to support you so that you don't perpetuate that cycle within your own family and become a productive member of society?
That's wonderful. I think you must have said something that hit a button with a listener, because our switchboard is on fire. So how about we take a call and see who would like to join us in this very interesting conversation.
Please.
Hello, you're on the line with Lauren and Sharon. Who's this?
This is Barbara.
Hello, Barbara.
Hi.
How are you?
I will have a question for Sharon.
Yes.
Which I think would be really valuable.
Hello, you're on the line with Lauren and Sharon. Who's this?
I'm hearing voices in my head.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Let me ask Sharon a question. I'm hearing double here.
Yes.
So that's interesting. I wanted to ask Sharon, when she was in this situation, did she remember having reoccurring dreams at that time? Because I find that's a real valuable source, even for a family to tune in to a child that is being abused through their dreams. When I'm counseling some people that I counsel, without even realizing that is the situation that they are involved in, it shows up in the pattern of their dreams. So I was wondering about this.
You know, I didn't have reoccurring dreams during the abuse. I had reoccurring dreams as a youngster in Israel, but not during the abuse, at least not that I recall. The ones that come to mind were in Israel early on, before the abuse.
I see. Were they disturbing dreams or not?
Yeah. The reoccurring one that I recall, the one that comes to mind every time someone talks about reoccurring dreams, is my stepfather and his friends rolling rocks onto me. And I never figured out what that was about, because my stepfather was the furthest thing from abuse that you could get. But that was what, that's the one that always comes to mind.
Right. That's an interesting dream, because there's something heavy being placed onto you, something that would be structured and heavy. That's how I see that at the moment. But I was curious about that because of the counseling work that I do through dreams. And also, I wanted to add that many, many men are also sexually abused. It's sometimes very overlooked, but it's a very big problem in society also. However, you know, I really appreciate your coming forth in the community, and that what you work with in that organization is powerful. And yes, counseling is really the most important, but sometimes, like you said, they can't get to that. And therefore, the power of the dream really does foretell. And when families are willing to have a dream, being willing to look at the child's dream in the morning, make it fun and interesting, and finding a safe place, I find that such a valuable place to be safe in revealing what is being taken in the advantage of the child, whether it be male or female. So
I'm very interested, Barbara, the work that you do, your dream work, is that something how do I phrase it? Something that can help someone move forward to take pieces of this puzzle through symbols and metaphors and put a broken life or a distracted life back together.
Totally. That's exactly the work that I do.
Hmm.
In fact, I was working the past year with someone, a young woman, and we worked through these situations very quickly. It was actually in four visits that the issue was brought forward, and because the safe place was created, that's a key, a safe place. She trusted me. It's about the trust to even allow that person to feel comfortable in knowing that they're not going to be judged, ridiculed, and that it was not their fault.
Right. And Sharon, I wanted to get back to you. That's very interesting because we're talking about signs and symbols. When you were 10, were there any symbols or signs in your relationship with your father that probably could have prevented something, not prevented it, or were you aware of something?
No, I was 10.
You were 10, that's
so
right.
No. I wouldn't have recognized it. Although I will say that there must have been signs with other people, because I tended to, because of my foundation with my mother and stepfather, my instinct was to stand up to him. So there is a specific instance that happened before the abuse happened where he was angry at me for something. I don't even remember what it was he was angry at me for. And he, you know, wagged his finger, though, don't do that, whatever it was. And sent me to my room. And I went to my room saying something or other, I don't remember. And I came back out and I looked at him and I, you know, stuck to him and said, and don't ever wag your finger in my face again. And I went back to my room. And apparently that was like, to my stepmother and her mom that were there. And I heard about this later on, that they were appalled. So they must have seen something that frightened them that I would stand up to him and in that way, even though at the time I didn't know to be concerned about such a thing. That was part of what I grew up with my mom and stepfather.
Yeah.
You know, before we get too far afield, I wanted to address something that Barbara said about men. And yes, men do certainly go through abuse, and or boys, if they're children, incest and domestic violence and all of that. And we certainly understand that. And we, in fact, one of our chaplains is devoted to men, absolutely. And in fact, we have worked with a similar organization called One in Six, because one in six men do have some sort of abuse or issues. And so they have shared with us their curriculum to add to our 60 hours of training for those that want to facilitate our men's group specifically. So, Barbara, we certainly do address the men issues as well.
And the reason I asked you about signs and symbols and is because I want our listeners, because sometimes people may not be completely aware, or they've buried a traumatic experience and they don't know why they make the choices that they do in life, whether it's in their career and relationships, etc. So I'm trying to enlighten perhaps listeners to say, hey, that kind of sounds familiar. You know, you're 10, you're a kid, you don't know. You know, you don't look for those signs. You're not aware, but just passing on your experience to help other people who are now in of an adult age to move forward, because this is something that happened in your past and you really don't want to take it with you. You just want it to say, okay, it's part of my fabric and it's gone. Learn from it and move on to have a voice. So it's wonderful that you have taken your experience and are helping others to work through their own, because, like I said, it's such a much-needed topic on so many levels. Don't you agree?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, why do you? You know what? Why do you think that? I mean, that's interesting. I've said that twice. That it's the best kept secret. Why do you think there is so much secrecy to the abuse?
Because many survivors feel that it was their fault. You know, I made him angry. I sent out signals. I, you know, whatever it is. And it's really a big step for a survivor to realize that it was, it's not their fault. It's not something to be ashamed of. That this is the abuser's, you know, fault to own. And, you know, whether or not they own it is a different issue. But it's not for the abuser to, I'm sorry, for the survivor to hold on to in a victimized role.
Right. Well, so where do you see Yes, I Can in the next 10 years?
You know, we want to be the premier resource. You know, that if someone thinks about child abuse and domestic violence and has a question, has an issue, that they know, oh, right, Yes, I Can, that's where I go. And so that's what we're working towards.
Well, I think that's a wonderful mission to have as a resource for people to go and know that there is help and they're not alone, that there are other people that have experienced something similar and that they can stop. You know what? It is a cycle. It is a pattern that if you don't address it, that you pass on to the next generation. If you choose to have children, you pass it on to your children, or maybe even through a spouse, you pass on certain behavior. And life, to me, is like a candy store. There's so much out there, so much that you can have, and so why limit yourself because of a past experience that colors the way you view your life?
Well, you know, you touched on something very important. Many survivors hear that if you were abused as a child, that you are doomed to repeat it, and hence the cycle. What they miss is the end of that sentence, which is you're only doomed to repeat it if you don't learn another way. And that's what Yes, I Can and similar organizations are here to do, is to teach you that there is another way, that you're not doomed. You're only doomed if you don't reach out.
There's a choice. We forget that we have a choice. And that,
exactly.
And I think what may happen to some people is that they see, oh, I see the choice, but they're stuck. They don't know how to, what to, where to. It's this yearning for, oh, I need help. I where do I go? So here's a place like Yes, I Can, yesican.org, for a chat room to be able to speak to a qualified crisis counselor to say, these are my feelings, my experiences. How can you help me? How can you make me see something different to help me make a better choice?
Yes, although we're not just crisis. I mean, we certainly do help those that are in crisis, but we tend to see a lot of folks that come back, you know, week after week, because they don't have that therapy resource in either in their community, or they don't have the financial resource. So it's not just during crisis. We're there to help and to guide throughout the healing process.
Well, you know, it sounds like maybe Barbara, we didn't get Barbara's last night, but someone like Barbara, I mean, dream work, there's so much, there's so many tools out there to use to really, and I think this is the key, to make us look inside this lovely vessel that we have, because we have the key to all the goodies inside, and so we want to look inside and look at the things that maybe we don't like so much, maybe about an experience with abuse or domestic violence or something of that sort, and see what we can do to change the pattern and are able to make a different choice. I know through dreams. And do you dream regularly?
You know, we all dream regularly. I just don't always remember them.
Yeah, because I'm from what I'm discovering is that dreams and nightmares hold keys to creativity and our own potential that we all have within us. And through, you know, charting them, journaling them, can we, you know, find answers, a repetitive dream, or see a pattern? I mean, it's fascinating. There's so many, it's as if you don't really have to go out and, like you're saying, spend the money. A lot of people might have a resource to see a therapist, but that doesn't mean that that help is not available.
Correct.
Wow, I've been correct a lot today. I like that. Bingo, I feel like we're playing a how to be correct game. All right, all those answers and more. I think we're weeding a lot out and providing valuable information for so many people. And let me, obviously, we've been giving out your website, yesican.org. People can also contact the organization by dialing 1-888-224-4226. And if they'd like your email address, Sharon, because your story is interesting and can be reflective of so many others' story, they can contact you at president@yesican.org. If people want to share their story with you or learn more about Yes I Can, and how can people become involved? Oh, and I want to talk about, you're having a fundraiser on June 10th, Strike Against Child Abuse to Spare Kids. Tell us more about that.
It is our annual fundraiser. We hold it every June. This is our 10th year, and it is indeed, it's on June 10th from noon to 4 at Canoga Bowl in Canoga Park. It's $15 a ticket. Whether you're adult or kid, it doesn't really matter. $15 a ticket gets you shoes, two games of bowling, plus a light lunch. And I guarantee you won't be able to get that deal if you walk into the bowling alley and just, you know, want that deal without coming to our organization. And then 80% of that comes directly to us.
Wonderful. And
through our services.
For those of our listeners outside the Los Angeles area, they can just log on to yesican.org and make a contribution?
They certainly can. There
Ooh,
is a,
I love that.
You know, a donate here button.
Ooh, I love a donate
and they
here
can
button.
Certainly do that.
Excellent. Well, Sharon, you know, you're just, it's just a delight to have you on, and thank you so much for sharing your own story and moving forward with helping other people get through a difficult time so that they can realize their own beauty, sparkle, and potential in the world in all areas of their life. So thank you so much for being here, and anytime you want to come on, my pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your airwaves with me.
You're welcome. Again, that's Sharon Uloff. A big thanks to Sharon and her organization, yesican.org, 888-224-4226. Or you can just contact Sharon at president@yesican.org. Please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, as my guest will be elder law attorney Michael Mitchell Karazov, and we'll also address elder abuse, which is a major topic also in today's society. Mm-hmm. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you for joining me and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. We'll lead you with Keith Chagall and Flight of the Monarchs.